Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Trouble for a troubled mind.
When Nick Drake died in 1974 at the age of 26, he was an obscure English singer and songwriter. But his legend has grown, and he's become hugely influential on several generations of singer-songwriters. Now there's a new tribute album to Nick Drake, put together by Joe Boyd, who discovered Nick Drake and produced his first records. Joe has also produced some of music's most iconic artists and albums, from Pink Floyd to Eric Clapton to R.E.M. Joe Boyd, welcome to Soundcheck.
Great to be here.
So the tribute to Nick Drake is called Way to Blue. For folks who may have heard the name, I mean, give us Nick Drake for Dummies, the quick guide to who he was.
Nick Drake was a upper middle class, well-educated English boy who developed a very unique style of guitar playing, who wrote very sophisticated songs, which were very difficult to categorize. He was very shy. He failed to connect with the few audiences that he confronted. He took a long time tuning his guitar to very complicated tunings. And as a result of which, the records that I made with him didn't sell. And he was very depressed about this. He felt very isolated. He grew more isolated as he grew older and eventually died of an overdose of antidepressants in 1974. And in the subsequent years, starting around 1977, 78, various people started writing about these records and a kind of groundswell of interest built up. And from, I'd say, 78 to 98, every year we sold more and more and more and more
than the year before. Yeah.
And eventually there was a Volkswagen commercial.
Right. And I remember being in the kitchen and my wife had the TV on in the other room, and suddenly I heard Pink Moon. And I came running in. I was like, what are you watching? And there it was, a Volkswagen commercial with this song by Nick Drake.
I saw it written and I saw it say, Pink Moon is on its way. None of you stand so tall. Pink Moon, then I get you. Oh, and it's a pink moon. Yeah, pink moon. Pink, 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 pink. Pink moon. Pink, 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 pink.
That's the title track from Nick Drake's 1972 album, Pink Moon. And my guest here is Joe Boyd in the Soundcheck studio, who produced Nick's first couple of records. Joe, you mentioned that Nick Drake had trouble connecting to an audience. Something somewhere along the line connected with you. Where, when did you first hear Nick Drake, and what was it that made you think, I need to work with this guy?
Fairport Convention played on the same gig that he was on.
And the English folk rock band.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the bass player, Ashley Hutchings, heard Nick and was intrigued and went and got his phone number and brought the phone number to me in my office and just handed me the slip of paper and said, you better call this guy. He's pretty interesting. And I called him. He brought in a tape. He left. At the end of the day, I put the tape on a little Wallenzach recorder in the corner of my office, and there were four songs on the tape, and I played the tape once, I played the tape twice, I played the tape three times. I just was stunned by it. Mm-hmm. And I called him up. I said, let's come on in, let's talk.
Wow. And it was just, was it as simple as that?
He was so unlike anyone else, and the music was so sophisticated, the words were so cleverly crafted. The thing, it was just another level to me, for me, of what you heard from your average singer-songwriter in 1969, you know.
So how frustrating was it for you to know that you're working with this guy who has this absolutely, you know, unique way of writing songs, tuning the guitar, this great voice, and it's just not connecting. It's just not going over.
I know. It was such a shock because I had this, I think I was probably a bit overconfident. I thought, well, Leonard Cohen doesn't sing live. You know, he thought, I'm a poet. I'm not a singer in those days. And he sold 100,000 records of his first album. I said, well, if he can do it, Nick Drake can do it. And I thought, we'd done a great record, the first record. And in later years, I read, somebody sent me a review from Melody Maker of Five Leaves Left, and it said that Five Leaves Left was an awkward mixture of folk and cocktail jazz.
Mm, wow.
So people just didn't get it. And you can sort of, in a way, I mean, it's terrible to think about this way, but the truth is, in a way, the fact that it didn't connect with the 60s and the early 70s has sort of freed the music to be appropriated by each subsequent generation. It's not something that was in those kids' parents' record collection. You don't hear Nick Drake songs in soundtracks to documentaries about the 60s.
Right.
It sort of frees. It floats freely in time.
So it's not sort of stuck in amber. It's not, you know, as a relic of something from those days. Five Leaves Left was the first record, 1969. Yep. And then you did
Brighter Later.
Yep. Which was the second record. Speaking with Joe Boyd, and now there's Way to Blue, the songs of Nick Drake, which is this tribute album. So you waited a long time to do this.
Well, you know, the whole idea of doing tribute albums, I've never been huge enthusiast for that because largely they don't work very well. Most tribute albums, people do their tracks and they send them in and then you put them all together. And the albums never hang together. They never sell particularly. Hmm. And the whole idea I've been slightly resistant to. But I was asked to put together a concert in Birmingham 4 years ago.
In Birmingham, England.
And I kind of had fun working with Kate St. John, who's a wonderful musical director, and Robert Kirby, who had written the original arrangements for Nick. And the three of us got together and we planned this concert and we had a great time doing it. And I remember feeling at the time, I don't want to record this. I don't want to get in talking to managers about rights and, you know, whatever. I don't want the artist to feel like it's being recorded. It's just a moment in time. It's going to evaporate. You have to be there. And it was just great. And the audiences loved it, and we got an offer to do more concerts. And then little by little, the band and the singers got so good at it that I thought, this might actually be worth releasing.
So then you had to talk to lawyers and managers.
Exactly.
And stuff. among the people on the record, you've got Lisa Hannigan. The Irish singer and cellist who some of us will remember from her work with Damien Rice. She does a couple of songs. Let's hear her version of Nick Drake's Black Eyed Dog.
A black eyed dog in your mind. Black eyed dog.
A little bit of Nick Drake's Black Eyed Dog, sung by Lisa Hannigan and taken from the album Way to Blue, the songs of Nick Drake, featuring people like Greene Gartside and Robin Hitchcock, Vashti Bunyan, Teddy Thompson, lots of others. Produced by Joe Boyd, who produced so many of the classic records of the 60s and 70s, Fairport Convention, who we mentioned before. Of course, Nick Drake's first couple of records, Joe. Did you know his mom?
I did.
Molly Drake having a moment recently.
Absolutely, and about time. Whenever I met her, I went to their house a few times, and there was a piano in the front room, and there was always like music papers scattered around, and Molly once said to me, "Oh well, you know, I just write a few amateur things, you know, I just fool around." And Nick used to say, "Well, yes, my mom writes a few things, you know," very dismissive. And it wasn't until after Nick and Molly were both dead that Gabrielle, Nick's sister, gave me a cassette of recordings of Molly's songs. And I put this cassette on it, and I was absolutely stunned, because you can hear in those chords, you can hear a lot of the unusual shapes of chords that Nick used.
Mm.
And in a way, you sort of feel, I mean, it's a bit of an oversimplification, but the reason that Nick had such complicated tunings was in order to match the sound that his mother got on the piano when he was growing up at home.
Yeah.
And
So it's the missing link in the Nick Drake
in a way.
Origin story.
The other Nick missing link, which I've come to in later years, which I deeply regret I never talked to Nick about, I think, the more you listen, the more I feel João Gilberto.
Oh.
That if you
the
know,
Brazilian singer-songwriter,
yeah, that the whole relationship between the way the vocal line and the guitar parts being so different,
yeah,
and going in such different directions, and you hear the beginning of Poor Boy is such a bossa nova beginning, you know, and I think you hear it subtly in a lot of Nick's music, and he was very open-eared. He listened to Miles Davis, he listened to Django Reinhardt, he listened to a wide range of influences, and I'm sure he must have heard bossa nova.
And the influence of his mother might not even have been noticed by either of them with her stuff just being in the house there. But now there is this record by Nick Drake's mother, the late Molly Drake, which includes this song called How Wild the Wind Blows.
The acorn carries an oak tree sleeping, but for a little while winter lies in the arms of spring. As a mother carries her child and never knows how wild the wind blows. A thought carries a universe, a seed carries a field of grain. Love lies in the arms of change. As a joy carries a pain, and no one knows.
How Wild the Wind Blows, a song, amateur recording, obviously. Molly Drake, Nick Drake's mother, also now deceased. We're speaking with Joe Boyd, who has put together the tribute album to Nick Drake called Way to Blue. So, Joe, you and some artists, Aoife O'Donovan, Jesse Harris, will be at Joe's Pub on April 10th doing a kind of Way to Blue thing.
Yeah, just presenting the idea and showing us some clips from the London concert, which was the subject of a BBC television special.
So that'll be Joe's Pub, Wednesday, April 10th. And then the film, A Skin Too Few, The Days of Nick Drake, at the Nighthawk Cinema in Williamsburg on the weekend of April 13th and 14th. What's that film?
It's an interesting thing because at a certain point in the year, I think it was in mid-90s somewhere, I was approached by the BBC. They wanted to do a documentary about Nick, and they made a really interesting presentation, and they had really clever director, young guy, and Gabrielle Drake and I both agreed to be part of it, and we thought they were terrific. And in the middle of all of this, I got these really annoying calls from a Dutch production team, and they were sort of, I don't know, they just annoyed me. But I said, well, it's sort of, I guess it's my job to get Nick out to as far many markets as possible, so I'll be in it. And they had me get in and out of a taxi for the camera and sort of things that I thought were very silly. And then the BBC documentary came out, and it was terrible. And it really didn't work. And then about a month later, I got an invitation to a screening of the Dutch documentary. And you know, everybody has the problem is that there's no footage of Nick.
Right.
I mean, except some home movies of when he was a little kid. And how do you do a documentary without any footage? Anyway, I went to this screening, and I was stunned. The Dutch had done this brilliant documentary that has toured a lot of documentary festivals around the world and is a wonderful hour-long piece, very, very moving, wonderful piece about Nick, and that's called A Skin Too Few, and that's it's very rarely shown in America, and we're going to show it with 35 mil print.
Nice.
At Nighthawk Cinema at brunch time on Saturday and Sunday, the 13th and 14th.
At brunch time.
And
okay.
I will, you know, say a few words.
Mm-hmm. Joe Boyd is with us here in the Soundcheck studio. Your work with Nick Drake, does it threaten to sort of overshadow all of the many other things that you've done during a very long and productive career?
No. I mean, I'm never going to be bashful about my work with Nick because I'm very proud of it. But, you know, I get rung up by the BBC to talk about lots of subjects. Recently, I've been doing an awful lot of talking about Syd Barrett. There have been a number
of... The founder of Pink Floyd.
Yeah, because I worked with him for a bit. And
how did that happen? How did a young American teenager in England end up being such a central part of the blossoming psychedelic rock scene, the folk rock scene?
I don't know. I mean, you know, you just put one foot in front of the other and things happen, and it's only you conceptualize it only when you look backwards. But I think that in trying to get some perspective on it, I suppose that being an outsider, there was a little bit of an advantage or at least a different perspective on, you know, to me, you know, Syd Barrett, Robin Williamson, Mike Heron, Nick
from the
Drake,
Incredible String Band.
Richard Thompson, Sandy Denny. They were all just talents that I saw as an outsider. I didn't have a kind of insider's obsession with being part of the pop scene or being part of the folk scene or being part of the underground scene or the jazz scene or whatever. To me, it was just all, wow, these are great talents, you know. And so maybe that was a help.
Yeah. And so you end up producing, which... You know, that role as a producer was sort of evolving at that time.
Yeah, but it was interesting. I read a book when I was a teenager called The Country Blues by Sam Charters.
Oh, yeah.
And he talked about Ralph Peer going through the South, renting hotel ballrooms and dragging the Memphis Jug Band and then later Jimmy Rogers and the Carter Family in to make records. And I thought, wow, I wish I'd been born in those days. I wish I'd been alive then. I would have loved to do that, you know. And then I had this revelation when I was about 17, you know, that the pop music of today is just a continuity of all of that. And it sort of hit me like, wow, I could do that. And actually, I was standing in the outfield catching fly balls for the starting nine at my high school team, and I was becoming clear that I was never going to be more than a second stringer. And I had this revelation. I listened to a Fats Domino record floating across the field, and I thought, yeah, it was Walking to New Orleans. And I realized that he was from New Orleans, and he was part of this New Orleans jazz that I loved, and it was just a continuity. And I thought, yes, and I could be a record producer, and all the first nine will be jealous.
So you put down your mitt and you haven't played baseball since.
That's
moved
right.
to a country where they don't even know from baseball.
That's right. They call it rounders.
We're speaking with Joe Boyd. So working with someone like Syd Barrett and the original Pink Floyd, though, it wasn't as simple as renting a room, putting them in, throwing up mics, making a record. I mean, listen to Arnold Lane, and there's lots of layers of stuff going on here. I mean, producing was a creative process at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, we were just trying to recreate in the studio what the Floyd sounded like. When I had a club called the UFO Club where they played, so I was very familiar with, and we had to compress these 12-minute excursions that they did into 3 minutes. And I was very fortunate because I stumbled across a studio called Sound Techniques and an engineer called John Wood, and I learned a huge amount from him. He knew nothing about this kind of music that I was bringing in, but I knew very little about sound. But I'd also had wonderful mentors. I mean, I'd sat next to Paul Rothchild in the studio in New York before I went to England when he was working with... He was the guy who produced the Butterfield Blues Band and Janis Joplin and the Doors. You know, Paul was one of the great producers of the 60s, and he sadly died quite young of cancer. I think Strange Days by the Doors is one of the great sounding records of that era, and that was Paul.
Well, and this was Joe Boyd, Pink Floyd's Arnold Lane.
Arnold Lane had a strange...
The song is Arnold Lane. It was an early hit for Pink Floyd at the time when Syd Barrett was still leading the band. And Joe Boyd, my guest, producing early Pink Floyd. And that's still a great sound.
it's a wonderful song, too. And it wasn't until years later I learned from other members of the group that Syd had grown up in a house his mother owned, and they had extra rooms, and they used to rent to students. And she discovered very early on that boys were annoying as tenants, that they were messy, that they didn't pay the rent on time. So she always rented to girls. And this was before washers and dryers, automatic, whatever, so that there was very often in the backyard hanging on the line, there was girls' underwear. And he remembers girls saying, "I left 5 knickers out to dry. There are only 4 now. Where'd the other one go?" And then there was a story in the local paper about a guy who got convicted of panty sniffing. And there, hence you have a folk song, which David Bowie actually said, he was quoted as saying that Arnold Lane changed his life. It gave him the freedom to sing just as he talked. Mm. That here was Syd singing not like an American, not like he was black, not like trying to be something he wasn't, just singing the way he talked. And this was greatly liberating for Bowie.
Now, it's, we were talking about your work with Nick Drake before, and of course, Nick Drake died at the age of 26. Syd Barrett, after whatever happened to him that famous weekend, the psychedelic meltdown, and out of Pink Floyd, and then living in his mother's house for all those years. Were you in touch with him during those later years?
No. It was very frustrating. I mean, I made that record. The group got a deal with EMI as a result of that record. They put it out. It was a hit. But EMI was a very rigid, old-school company. They wanted everything to be made in their studios with their producers, their staff engineers, their staff producers. And so I was... let go. Mm-hmm. And so I saw him. He came down to play at UFO, but he deteriorated over the course of those months afterwards. And then it was just, he just went off. It was very uncomfortable and painful to be around him because I remembered the great, sparky, bright-eyed, mm-hmm. wonderful, smart guy that I'd met.
Yeah. He was so busy in those days. I mean, you mentioned, Fairport Convention, Richard Thompson and Sandy Denny. Of course, Richard Thompson and Linda Thompson, and now the next generation, Teddy Thompson's on the Nick Drake tribute. So obviously those are ties that you've maintained over the long years.
Absolutely.
And what about the McGarrigles, Kate and Anna?
Well, that was doing the first two records of Kate and Anna was a great experience for me. And Kate McGarrigle was, a dear friend for all her life and a wonderful character. And I think one of the great North American songwriters. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say American because she's Canadian.
Canadian, right.
You know, it's in, at one level, it's a bit depressing to think that I'm, you know, my work with these people some are now in the category of tribute concerts. But the concert we did a couple of years ago at Town Hall, we did two nights at Town Hall. Before that, we did the Festival Hall in England. Then we did Toronto last summer. They've been wonderful concerts because you have so many different singers, different styles, very much is the same with Nick. You get people who sound so different from Nick singing these songs, so different from Kate singing her songs. And to me, that contrast proves what great songs they are.
Mm.
And we had, you know, everyone from, well, her kids, you know, Rufus and Martha to Norah Jones and Jimmy Fallon and Anthony, you know, singing her songs, and they just stand up as wonderful, brilliant songs.
So you'll be doing that again in June.
Well, there's a film that was made of the Town Hall concerts, and there's a record coming out. I'm producing a record, which will be out on Nonesuch, and we're doing a little thing sort of like what I'm doing at Joe's Pub, you know,
right.
Kind of showing the film and a few people singing and some of the, like that at Brooklyn Academy in June.
But the Nick Drake tribute, Way to Blue, that event is happening at Joe's Pub Wednesday night, April 10th. And then Joe Boyd screening the film A Skin Too Few, The Days of Nick Drake, at brunch time on April 13th and 14th, Saturday and Sunday, at the Nighthawk Cinema in Williamsburg. Joe Boyd has been my guest on Soundcheck. The new album is called Way to Blue, The Songs of Nick Drake, and we'll hear a version of Riverman done by Teddy Thompson, the son of Richard and Linda Thompson, with whom Joe has worked so productively over the years. Joe, great to have you with us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks very much for having me.
Gonna see the Riverman. Gonna tell him all I can about the plan.